Life in the city has its own merits. Creature comforts, good relationships among human beings, colorful recreational facilities, and high-rise buildings, but they come at a price. Large populations, polluted air, ear-splitting noises, a stressful lifestyle, and non-existent peace and tranquility. Life in the city is difficult for humans, very difficult, but perhaps most of us city dwellers didn't have a choice but to get accustomed to this lifestyle. Or maybe we humans set off on the journey of life on the wrong foot. And now, in search of a better life, better from our own point of view, we have to expand our cities, live a more industrialized lifestyle, and gradually forget where we came from. The fact is that nature was the biggest part of the human existence for thousands of years. But for hundreds of years now, we have deprived ourselves of the peace and tranquility bestowed upon us by God in the form of the natural world. And we still don't know why we have resigned ourselves to the hustle and bustle of life in these concrete jungles. I couldn't stand life in the city anymore. So for a few days, I went on a trip to my original home, the natural world. I have always been a responsible traveler into the natural world. I have never so much as hurt an ant or a plant in my original habitat created by Mother Nature. This time, my destination was part of the Zagros Mountains in the southwest of my beloved country. The Zagros Mountain Range is an important link between the Alps in Europe and the Himalayas in Asia. This beautiful, large mountain range emerged as a result of the decrease in the Tethys Ocean water levels around 60 million years ago. That's the tertiary or the third geological period. The Zagros Mountains are in fact wrinkles caused by the tectonic movements of the Arabian Plate and its pressure on the crust of the Earth. In technical parlance, the interaction between tectonic plates is called orogeny, and scientists say this mechanism is still ongoing in the Zagros Mountains.
Salam.
Hi, I'm Javad Gharayi, an Iran trotter. This time, I've traveled to one of the untouched areas of Zagros. The purpose of this trip is to visit the Kul Khorasan Valley, pronounced Kul Khorasan by the locals. The valley is one of the most pristine and, of course, most dangerous of its kind in this region. I'll have to walk a long way from one end of the gorge to the other. And we're talking 20 to 25 kilometers on foot. But before I get there, I'll have to traverse the Eshkafzadeh Valley. Not many people have traveled here. I hope to spend beautiful days and nights here over the next couple of days on my long trek to Kul Khorasan. To get to Kul Khorasan, I had to walk a long way along the Dez Dam Lake, a deep water basin fed by drinking water from the heights of the Zagros Range. After flowing for around 200 kilometers from its primary source, that is Zard Kuh Mountain, the Abbahtiari River meets Sezar River and then flows into Dez. The Dez River, which is around 65 kilometers long, then goes through the Dez Dam on its way to the Karun, considered Iran's longest natural flowing water course at 950 kilometers long. Wow, look over there. Look at all those fish. It looks like a very interesting spot from here. I went there in the middle of March, but the weather in the area, despite the cold lake water, was very warm. It felt like the cycle of season in Khuzestan province had changed and started with the summer season. Even so, at around 100 kilometers farther, meaning somewhere around Zard Kuh in Charmahal and Bakhtiari province, the grass hadn't sprung out just yet because of the cold and snow in the previous months. And the reason the water of the Dez River is so cold is that same snow up in the mountains where the water originates from.
I've been walking for hours now, and it's very hot here. I think I'd better jump in the water before I get heat stroke. The water of Des Dam Lake is very cool. Heat stroke is one of the main hazards of traveling into a hot climate. And the way to prevent this most serious of heat injuries is to wear the right clothes, avoid unnecessary physical activity, drink enough water, and eat the right food. In spite of all that, I was frustrated by the hot spring weather in Khuzestan. My best option was to take a dive into the lake. But swimming in cold water in hot weather conditions can be very dangerous to those with a bad heart. But to me, the cold water wasn't a problem. It's really hot right now. I think this would be just the right spot for a swim in the Des Dam Lake. Hang on a minute. The Des Dam Lake is one of the most beautiful lakes in Iran, located in the northeast of Andimeshk. This body of water is home to a wide variety of fish species, drawing a large number of professional fishers to itself every year. Species such as the rainbow trout, the mangar, the sheerbut, the Danube bleak, the silver carp, the barbel, and the kangal. Who would have thought you could swim in cold water in the winter? The water is cold, but the weather is hot, and that calls for a swim in these beautiful waters. To capture the beauties of beloved Iran, my crew and I traveled to far and untouched places. Travels that had interesting and at times dangerous incidents in store for us. From mishaps in the mountains, to frostbite and heatstroke, to bug bites, and to many other perils. And this trip was no exception to the rule. At my cameraman's request, I strapped a waterproof camera to my head to capture the moment when I dove into the water. But for some unknown reason, the camera came off its mount and sank to the bottom of the lake. Because of the films we had stored on the camera's memory card, we had to fish it out of the water, no matter what. We have been trying to find our waterproof camera for the past 25 minutes. It's somewhere down there. It's very deep here, around 10 meters or so. Deep enough to make your ears ache when you plunge to the bottom. None of us, I mean me, Kurush or Kayvon, none of us has been able to get to the bottom just yet. Thank you. I'm afraid none of us had dived to depths more than 4 meters without diving gear. Every attempt my good friend Kurush and I made hit a dead end. The lack of diving gear prevented us from getting down to where the camera was. The pressure from the water was too much to bear, giving both of us excruciating pain in our ears. We couldn't stay underwater for too long. Disappointed and frustrated, I decided to give it one last go before I stopped the search. It was down there for 25 minutes and 56 seconds. Ah, my ears. I'd almost given up. At 8 meters where our camera had plunged to, the pressure from the water was much more than the air pressure in the middle ear, and that excessive external pressure ended up hurting my eardrums. I tried yawning and swallowing water to relieve the pressure on the middle ear and alleviate the pain, but it didn't work. But then Kurush suggested sucking out the air in my ears, and that equalized the air pressure in my middle ear. The pain in my ears was gone. After a long, fun swim and the challenge we had with the lake over recovering one of our cameras, it started to get dark. We had to pitch our tents before the dark set in. The whole area was clean and peaceful, with no trace of waste or smog, or of automobiles and human activity. It's starting to get dark, and before that happens, you've got to find yourself a proper spot to camp out and pitch your tent on. We don't have to rush it when it comes to pitching our tent. I have a great view from here. This tent has a low ceiling, so if wind starts blowing here, it's not going to be able to cause any trouble. So, Kurush, how do you feel having me pitch your tent every time? This is a tarp that covers our tents. It is waterproof and it also acts as a windbreaker. What it also does is it keeps the inside a bit warmer. But here we're almost at the end of the winter, right next to the Dez Lake, and it's really warmed up. So I think we're not going to need a second tarp. We aren't getting any rain either. I checked the weather report for the next 5 days, and it said there would be no rain in the next 4 or 5 days. And that's how long I'm planning to stay in this area anyway. So I have no reason to use this tarp for the tent. The tent is set up. I have put everything away. There is nothing left out here. I always keep my backpack and everything else inside my tent because I want to zip up the entrance flap. That's because I don't want any scorpions, snakes, or other creepy crawlies coming into my tent. The natural world is every human's first and last true home, and so I always take care of my home. I do everything I can not to put any scars on the face of Mother Nature. I woke up early in the morning the next day, and after walking a long way, I arrived at the mouth of the valley, but not from the bottom. Before venturing into the cool Kherson Gorge, I wanted to explore the route from above to see what I was up against. To do that, I had to walk on the only path that gave me a bird's eye view of what was lying at the bottom of the valley. I went past an ancient cemetery that was part of the Shadab Citadel and went on to get atop the walls of the valley. The trail was considered ancient, the only one that led to Shadab Citadel. To this day, many of the folks in this area use it to take their livestock to the pastures lying on higher ground. It was a long trail and the weather boiling hot. I had to use my drinking water supply efficiently. Hiking in the mountains is very difficult in hot weather. As the temperatures rise, the body perspires more, leading to dehydration, cramps, sodium deficiency, and other subsequent problems. Mountaineers have a famous motto: drink before you're thirsty, eat before you're hungry, and rest before you're tired. Any traveler who abides by those golden rules will ensure a successful trip. They also take the most basic training courses on nature traveling and mountain climbing. We have kept tabs on this area's weather for 20 days. It's been either gloomy or cloudy with a haze of dust moving towards Khuzestan from our neighboring country, Iraq. Those weather conditions prevented me from continuing my journey and my team from filming it. But eventually, we decided to move on to the target area despite the cloudy skies and despite the haze particles. We did it primarily because the heat was becoming unbearable. Although these are the final days of winter, this whole area has turned yellow because there hasn't been much rain. There is no grass. It's just very hot at the moment. But I'm sure that the inside of Kul Kherson, the temperature is much lower than out here. After relatively a long walk, I got near the top of the valley, the one that would take me to Kul Kherson. It's called Eshkafzarde. I'm standing atop Eshkafzarde right now, and that over there is its other wall. It's somewhere between 200 and 250 meters deep. It starts here and leads to Kul Kherson, which is located that way. I'm counting the moments to get down to Kul Kherson. Look at these tall walls. For me, climbing up mountains and standing on top of them was such a pleasure. Looking down at deep valleys fills you with strange feelings of awe and tons of energy. The hard efforts you make to get to such beautiful sights in your natural environment is comparable to the efforts you make and the hope you have for achieving success in life. That's the first lesson to learn from Mother Nature. Seeing the low-lying sights detaches you from the material world, from the day-to-day preoccupations and materialistic attachments. I promised you around 2 years ago I would travel to this beautiful ravine, walk through both Eshkafzadeh and Kulkhersan to the very end and show you all their beauties and challenges. And here I am now. Tomorrow is going to be a beautiful and momentous day. The natural world causes human beings to think deeply about it and comprehend the greatness of God and bow before Him in humility. The natural world is a manifestation of God's presence and of His glory. How can humans not be at peace when they are being watched over by God? Humans have always lived in peace in the heart of nature. I too was basking in the glory and peace afforded me by the environment. I resumed my journey by walking down to Eshkafzadeh that would lead me to the mouth of Kulkhersan. The valley started with a natural jungle of Sisyphus and mountain almond trees. These are mountain almonds. Most of the time, wild almonds are bitter and don't really come to much use. But the locals pick these and make them sweet somehow. They boil them in hot water a few times and put them through some kind of process to make them sweet. Can't eat them like this. I always carry a first aid kit with me on all my trips. That's because accidents are lurking everywhere out in the wild. Carrying a first aid kit and, more importantly, learning the basics of giving first aid gives you a sense of security and enables you to enjoy your trip more than you would without it. I was picking some Sisyphus fruits in Eshkafzadeh when the Sisyphus is a strange tree. Look what happened. It has really strange thorns. I cut my finger on one of them. A first aid kit can really come in handy when you're traveling in the wilderness. You have to carry one all the time. That wall over there is the same one I spent yesterday walking on for a view of Eshkafzadeh and Kulkhersan to see where I was going. Right now, I'm deep in the heart of Eshkafzadeh. The blurry background you see behind me is not the result of the cloudy skies above. It's the haze and other particles picked up by the wind and carried in the direction of Khuzestan province. Those living in Khuzestan and Ilam are grappling with this problem more than anyone else. Before I came down here, I mean before I entered into any ravine or canyon, I checked the weather report. Because if it starts to rain or if the forecast has warned of inclement weather, I will no doubt be faced with serious problems. And I'm going to tell you what those problems are once I get inside Kul Khersan. The weather was a bit better than the day before, but the haze got much thicker, preventing the light from the sun from reaching the area. Those particles had created serious problems for my fellow Iranians in Khuzestan province and its nearby cities. More importantly, they posed serious threats to the area and the future generations. Experts have produced solid evidence blaming human activity for the problem. We are dealing with the consequences of what others did in the past. About 20 years ago, Turkey started a water war with Iraq. The implementation by Turkey of a massive project to triple the country's water reserves led to the construction of numerous dams in the country over the past 20 years. Those dams trapped two-thirds of the water that flowed to the Euphrates and Tigris rivers in Iraq, causing a drought in some areas of that country. As a consequence, Iraq increased the number of its deep wells from around 50 to more than 2,100. That led to a sudden decline in subterranean water reservoirs and aggravated the drought. The Glory Canal, built by Saddam Hussein in 1993 to redirect water flowing from the Tigris River into the Euphrates near their confluence at the Shatt al-Arab, was another deadly blow to the Tigris and Euphrates. That project pushed down the water levels in those rivers to a tenth of what they had been. As a result, less and less water flowed from those rivers to the Mesopotamian marshes located in southern Iraq and partially in southwestern Iran and Kuwait. In Iran too, upstream dam construction and operation reduced the amount of water that flowed into the Karkhir River. And now scientists say we might forever lose 95% of the Mesopotamian marshes and its adjacent wetlands in the region, such as the Hawaza, Hamar, and Shadgan marshes. Iran and Iraq share the Mesopotamian marshes. It's a vast region that used to be the largest wetland ecosystem of Western Eurasia. Today, it's nothing more than a hot and arid wasteland. Iraq used to apply mulch or soil covers to control soil erosion, but because of the instability in that country, mulching operations haven't been carried out for years. Today, all it takes is a breeze to kick up a huge wall of dust and move it in any direction. And as luck would have it, the winds of Iraq always blow in the direction of Iran, and the people of Khuzestan bear the brunt of them. On the other hand, Saudi Arabia's ambitious plan to become the world's biggest exporter of wheat ended in failure, and millions of hectares of farmland in the north of the country were left unused. The region was faced with an unprecedented environmental crisis. In a bid to materialize that dream, the Saudis pumped out precious fossil water contained in aquifers at 1,000 meters below the ground. And they only abandoned that dream after depleting all those resources. The price they paid for that mistake was the region's ecosystem. And now vast areas of Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Iran and other Persian Gulf littoral states are all facing a serious and obvious water crisis. And without urgent action on the part of the officials and experts in all the regional countries, we are bound for a much larger catastrophe. And that's when nothing can be done. The purpose of my trip was to experience the peace and quiet in the region, an eerie feeling of peace and excitement from walking along a valley. But the fact was that the region's environmental problems disturbed that peace. And so I grew ever more concerned about the survival of planet Earth, the only inhabitable planet where mankind can continue living. I kept asking myself why. Why are we humans deliberately destroying our one and only planet Earth with our own very hands? What's all the rush for replacing the natural world with things made of plastic, concrete, and steel? What's the reason behind the human greed for turning more of the natural world into concrete jungle? do we humans not know, will be around for only a little while, that we must protect and preserve our environment for the sake of those who will come to this world after we are gone. When the environment dies, so will everything else, the earth and all the creatures living on it. The death of the earth will spell the death of mankind. With all those questions still unanswered, I continued my journey. I wanted to enjoy my time in this untouched valley to the fullest, now that I was away from all cities and modernity. After spending hours walking in the Eshkaf Zardeh Valley, I've arrived at the very bottom of it. I think it'll be another 2 hours before I get to the mouth of Kul Hersan. It's a beautiful route, and there's also water streaming on the bottom. There are lots of palm trees here, in addition to the Sisyphus trees at the mouth of the valley. And I think the dates on these palms ripen round about July. Apparently, people from different Bakhtiari tribes lived here 40 or 50 years ago, and they used that water mill there to grind the wheat that they dry farmed. The cairn you see over there, there is a ditch behind it. Of course, most of it has been buried by a landslide here. So the water would flow all the way from there and get to the stone all over here that was made to house the water mill. This used to be taller. This is a very interesting gutter. The water would eventually end up here. I see walls down there. Well, the roof is gone, but those are no doubt the walls of the mill operator's room that are still standing. And the hole in the ground down there means the grindstone was here at the time. They might have relocated the stone as they moved somewhere else. This is exactly the spot where the grindstone used to be, but they have moved it somewhere else. The only thing that's left of the whole mill is this wall, this hole, and the ruins of the windmill operator's chamber. This is a dangerous place to be. I really have to be very cautious so nothing happens to me. The number one fruit here, particularly in Khuzestan, is the Sisyphus. Look at these. These are just wonderful. You have to be very careful when picking these. The Sisyphus is a very thorny plant. They're amazing. check out what water has done to those rocks. So many patterns. It's broken through the rocks, washed them out of the way, and continued on its course. Up I go. I'm nearing the end of Eshkafzadeh Valley. I think I have another 2 hours to go before I get to the beginning of Gul Khersan. I am surrounded by reeds here. They cover a vast area around here. Look over there. Shotgun shell casings left behind by poachers. They have no mercy on the environment. And without a doubt, God will have no mercy on them. I've been walking for 3.5 hours now. I think I've walked a total of 10 or 12 kilometers. This is where the Gul Khersan Valley begins. If I'm not wrong, I have a 15 or 20 kilometer walk to do. I'm about to step into the Gul Khersan Valley from here. These walls here are telling me that I should take safety measures. The most important thing I've learned from my trainers about traveling into the wild is safety always, always comes first. Water has accumulated here because it has hit a rocky bottom and it cannot sink. From this point on, I should take a lot of care. You know, try not to get wet as much as I can. The moment I stepped into the Gul Khersan Valley, I was filled with excitement because all of a sudden, everything changed. I could barely see the sky above. I was flanked by walls that I knew were more than 200 meters tall and impossible to climb. Water is dripping everywhere. At that point, the only way out was forward. All I could see were the walls of the ravine. This is a terrifying place to be. Those big rocks you see up there rolled down from the top of the gorge. And since it get really tight over here, they got caught up there. They didn't make it to the bottom. The locals here refer to this place as the Kul. In the local dialect, Kul means a deep, narrow ravine. In some places, there's space for only one person to pass. That's why they have named this place the Gul Khersan. As a matter of fact, many bears used to inhabit the area above this gorge, bears that used to live in the Zagros range, but there aren't many of them around anymore. So that's why they named this place the Gul Khersan. Look, the water has sunk into the ground here. The ground under my feet is completely dry now, although I've had to waddle through water most of the way here. Look here, reeds that slid down from up there. This is the work of floodwaters, you see. They got trapped here. Oh my goodness, look over there. Up there, I mean. Big branches from trees. Over there, between 20 to 25 meters from where I'm standing. Look over there. Those large pieces of wood, they look like tree trunks to me. They were dumped here by floodwaters from Eshkafzadeh that swept across this gorge. Take a look. Just imagine what this place looks like when floodwaters arrive. Those floodwaters can knock down a building within minutes. The water levels here can rise as high as 20 meters in the event of a flood. These tangled sticks of wood used to be trees. The floods have uprooted those trees. I see lots of large tree branches up there. They got stuck up there when the waters came cascading down into the valley. Anyone unfortunate enough to be here during flooding is bound to lose their life. The floods brought tree trunks here all the way from Eshkafzardeh. Keep in mind, you have to check the weather report and come here only if no rain's been forecast for a couple of days in a row. No one can come here in time to rescue you, to help you. Not helicopters, not relief and rescue teams. It's a Herculean task coming down here. Ouch! I'd have hurt my head if I weren't wearing this helmet. Total darkness. The light from the sun can't make it down here on this spot, and so it's pitch black. But I have a solution in my backpack for a situation like this. Don't forget extra batteries. The rocks that have gotten stuck up there are blocking sunlight from reaching the bottom. They have formed a ceiling in this part of Kul Kharsan. But a few meters ahead, it's back to normal. Nothing to block the sun. Not many rocks stuck above my head. GPS doesn't work here at all. I had signals up to the mouth of Kul Kharsan, but there is no reception here. I have arrived at the fork in the road, so to speak. But as far as I remember, and according to what the locals have told me, I have to make a right. That's the path that leads to the other end of Kul Kharsan. This rock is one of those up there that's made it down to the bottom. As I said earlier, most of the rocks that end up in the ravine don't make it to the bottom of it. But this guy is an exception. Look here. Looks like my filming crew and I are not the only ones in the gorge. There's a spider that spun this big web stretching the two walls of the gorge. And over there, if I'm not mistaken, those are the droppings of the mountain goats who inhabit this area, somewhere up these walls. Now, I have to get to the other side of the spider web without doing it any harm. Well, we are mere visitors here, and this guy and other creatures here are the hosts. The whole area with everything in it is their home. I've been walking for like 4 hours now, but there is no end in sight just yet. I don't seem to have come anywhere near Kul Kharsan, and I'm kind of worried. I've been told the Dez River is on the other end of the gorge. That is the water coming down from the Dez Dam and flowing all the way to the city of Dezful. But I'm wondering how far away that is. I can't see any signs of it yet. No rivers, no nothing. The water on the bottom of the ravine is no more. Of course, the water is still moving towards the river from underground. But that doesn't make me any less worried. When you get to this point on your journey, you realize they named this gorge the Kul for a reason. Look how tight it gets here. After walking along the gorge for 6.5 hours, I've reached the end of it. Well, almost. I think I have another 100 or 150 meters to traverse. Water is coming up. This is water from the Dez River, originating from the Dez Dam. I think I'm about to see an exciting scene once I get out of here. But before I do that, I'm going to have to take my clothes off and hit the waters. It's ice cold. It's ice cold, man. It's freezing. Wow. I have to get to the very end of this gorge to get to Dez River coming from the Dez Dam. I'm reaching the end of Kul Khersan, and as I get closer to the end, I can hear the roar of the Dez River. God, it's very cold. Yes, the Dez River. They say it's around 20 meters deep here. That's because it's right behind the dam. This is the end of Kul Khersan. God, thank you. We did it! Yes! But this is a very dangerous spot. If you get too close to that part where the river is, you might get swept away by the strong currents of the Dez. It is so cold here. My whole body is tingling as we speak. And here are my filming crew members, have also braved the ice-cold waters and come with me all the way here. They have been working for 5 days non-stop. Just like me, they have traveled on an about 70-kilometer route in the mountains and valleys. Thank you, guys! I'm gonna bid farewell to the Dez River. These cold, roaring currents. I have to go back before it gets dark. I have like 8 hours of walking to do to return home. God, it's cold here. I'm 35 years old, and my friends here are right about that age as well. And we have been nature travelers for years. But never ever have we left any of our garbage behind in the wild. Because we want everyone to enjoy being in the natural world as much as we do. We don't want them to end up cursing us for littering the landscape with our waste. Look, Kurush has put all our garbage into a bag and is tying it to my backpack. This means a lot to me. It's a very noble thing to do, carrying this garbage. If everyone carries their own refuse, our environment will forever remain clean and healthy. My hat is off to any nature traveler who has their garbage attached to their backpack. I'd love to meet them and make their acquaintance. Let's go, guys! Goodbye, Kul Khersan! We had a long way to go to get out of the ravine. After 5 hours of non-stop walking in Kul Khersan, we arrived back in Eshkafzadeh. I had promised my crew members to give them a treat if everything went smoothly. I had also said I'd let them choose. But soon, I wished I hadn't done that. The filming crew and others say because everything went according to plan, they want me to celebrate by jumping down into the water down here. Is it very deep down there? Can I please not jump? Let me go down a little bit more. It's very cold. Man, this is some cold water. Why did you do this to me? I left Khuzestan brimming with the positive energy that I had imbibed from its environment, and I did it without leaving a single sign of myself there. Right there, I wished once again that no human being would do anything to harm this manifestation of God's beauty, the natural world.